When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Curse, episode 4, Under the Big Tree, is over. Here on Post Show Recap, we are just getting started. My name is Grace, but of course, I'm not alone. I'm here with Dr. Amanda. Amanda, how are you doing?
I'm good. That's just a computerized voice. That's not we don't even look at these recordings, Grace.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I saw that you are being recorded.
Yes.
I figured we would do this one, no words, and try to enlighten the audience. Or make them laugh. I don't know.
Yeah, because you know what? I find there's more and more words that are off limits nowadays. So it's better to just do these podcasts wordlessly. I think we should try that out.
Yeah, then we won't get canceled. That's good. Yeah. All right. Episode 4 of The Curse, Under the Big Tree. A weird one. I don't know that this show has, you know, a thing I say all the time that I'm sure people are so sick of, to the point where like DM Philly will say, like, this is a thing that Grace says based on a thing that Josh Wagler says.
Yes.
Josh Wagler always says, let the show teach you what it is or you figure out the show. I don't know that I figured out exactly what the show is, because I feel like every episode sort of has its own vibe going on.
Yeah, just last week we were like, oh, well, I guess that they're just not going to have an HGTV show. That was like a red herring. That's not really going to be part of it. So, of course, like the show takes another swerve and subverts our expectations. Now the HGTV show is picked up. We don't actually like see a lot of the filming of that yet, but I can imagine that that's in the offing. Grace, I was like catching up on some of the reviews of The Curse that I had missed. Like New York Times had a review. I also looked at Salon. So some of the journalists who had watched the entire thing and wrote their reviews of the full series, who, you know, had access to screeners. And you and I have been watching one episode at a time along with the viewers, but it sounds like there might be more twists and turns in store for us, like based on what these reviewers were saying.
Okay, that's interesting, because I thought that this episode was going to start off with a big mystery, but then we find out what happens almost immediately later, and it's I don't like it. It's more Dougie being awkward content, which we'll get into. I said last week that the not being picked up yet, I thought, was a really smart move in terms of the world that they could play in which they've come in and disrupted the town, and that might not have even been, you know, for the thing that they thought they would get out of that, which was a TV show, which now they are, which I think is where we thought the show might be going, you know, when we started it. So the fact that we're kind of back in that mode of the TV show has been officially picked up, and now they're on the track to sort of like, you know, go through with it, even though, as we've seen, people might not be fully satisfied with their passive homes or happy with the effect that passive homes are happening on the community. So neither the people who have moved in nor the people who lived there before seem to be very happy. And I think the show, like in terms of the themes that it's playing with, are hitting on them extremely well. I think it's a very like poignant show that I'm excited to break down another episode of.
Yes, I'm excited. Let's get into it.
All right. So this is another episode, again, directed by the Zellner brothers. So David and Nathan Zellner, who seem to, I think they've done 2, 3, and 4 now. So we open with Dougie asleep in his car and his phone is ringing, and he does try to sort of like snooze it or turn it off. But it turns out it's Martha from HGTV, and they're picking up 10 episodes. One thing I did catch here, Amanda, that I'm intrigued whether this will be a thing at all. Again, I'm just planting my flags on things and seeing. She says it got picked up for HGTV Go. And I believe she's, which is implied to be, I think that's the streaming service of HGTV rather than maybe the network,
Which
I don't know if it means anything, but there's a potential that they are not going to be on network television. They are, if they are subjected to just streaming, could be very fun. Anyway.
And then we know that sometimes these streaming networks even disappear overnight.
That's right. And yeah, shelve your content. But his phone dies and he goes outside. He has "under the big tree" written on his hand. Mm-hmm. And there are two other cars there as well. And I do, whoever is the set location scout for the show is like, can you pick an area that just has a bunch of kind of big trees for him to try and figure out which one is it? He's measuring with his hand. It's really great. Turns out it's the small tree and he's a genius.
It turns out it's this, and I love this because he's like, he says, oh, like, you're a genius. It's all there. It's all there. Of course, Dougie, it's a reason. Like, so, I mean, obviously Dougie's like very disoriented. He doesn't remember what happened. Like we get the impression that he's making sense of what this all means. He obviously doesn't remember where he hid this package that we're going to find out is the three sets of car keys. You say, Grace, that you don't like where this goes. I also don't like where it goes, but I was expecting the absolute worst. Like, I was terrified. I feel like this whole opening scene had this real palpable sense of horror. Like, whose cars are these? Where are these people? What is Dougie going to find? I really thought that, you know, anything was possible here, and a lot of these possibilities were pretty gruesome. We have the whole scorpion. Yeah. It's like there's really like a lot of tension in this opening scene.
He also finds a ceramic shard that he mm-hmm. then pockets, and we'll see him, I believe the closing shot of the episode is him also holding this shard.
Nearly the closing shot. But yes, we do see him with that at the end of the episode.
That's right. That's right. Oh yeah, that's right. The Asher weird face is the closing of the episode. I forgot. Yeah. So yeah, he finds these three sets of keys. One is his own. The others say Calvin 830 and Wyatt 845, and they have addresses on them. And I do agree. This was very much in the, I think like episode one or two certainly had like, there's a lot of like horror scoring of the show mm-hmm. of like, it's like uncomfortable noises is the best way I can put it. It's like, you know, these like screeches and, mm-hmm. and this, the opening scene definitely had this vibe for sure. All right. We get Whitney and Asher. They learn that they've been picked up for 10 episodes and Asher plays the air guitar. And I think this is another episode of like Whitney being like, if they could just see us, like they, because this is very funny in the moment that he is being such a goofball. Cause she tells mm-hmm. her on the phone, like he's playing the air guitar. Asher, where potentially we learn he maybe needs a corporate comedy class, is when he goes yes. and puts on a cowboy hat and then he mutes the phone to say, spank you very much.
Oh my God. It's so like he thinks he's so funny. He puts on a cowboy hat and starts like riding a pony like into the room. And it's unclear, like, does Whitney find this charming and funny, or is she going along with it? Because she seems to, like you said, Grace, be like, oh, like there's part of it that she says, like, oh, you should see right now Asher's literally pretending to play guitar. Like she's yeah. so tickled by it. And then there's this whole thing where he says like, oh, we'll put more of that on the show. Like everybody wants me to be funny. Look at how funny I could be. But I don't know if it's the focus group that got this in Whitney's head or if like there's a part of her that doubts that Asher is as charming and funny as he thinks he is. Like, but I'm wondering whether it's sort of interesting if Whitney like does find Asher funny, but now that she's heard this focus group feedback that other people don't, that it completely changes her perception because she's so concerned with how other people see her and her outward image.
Yeah, I mean, so she's saying this on the phone, and then later she is going to, I mean, almost immediately, she brings up the idea of these corporate comedy classes. I almost feel like, at this point, she has no other choice other than to, like, try to figure out how to, to believe in some sense that he is almost funny enough, and to mm-hmm. convince the HGTV, Martha woman, that he is funny, and then try to make him actually funnier.
Right.
To make it all work, right? Like that, I feel like that's a little bit of what she has to be hoping for, because she can't not have Asher's going to be in this thing, you know?
Like, right.
I mean, unless the twists and turns you were talking about is that Asher is like acts out of the piece, which we'll see. Like, again, we get this other moment, and this came up earlier where Dougie Dougie is trying to like frame the show. And I think it's an early episode where he wants Asher to kind of like talk badly about Whitney. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do that. But he wants this like conflict in the show. So certainly there is this conflict of like, whether or not it should be the two of them, not the two of them. I think that for me, that's a given. And then Whitney's trying to figure out like, how do I make this work? You know?
Right.
She's trying to pitch it to Martha. Well, and then also try to like get Asher to take a corporate comedy class, which she
And she is like, she's like, we're just going to be working on Asher's air guitar.
Asher makes the, he says, yeah, you'll see a lot more of me. Only PG, only G rated.
Only G rated.
And she's like, oh, okay. The other piece that's going to come from Martha is less focus of the people who used to live in the houses, which is interesting because it's the thing that like engages the focus group. And so they do have this conversation and they basically both spin it as a win. Like, we can focus on the houses. We can do all this other stuff. This is, you know, it's we're still doing good. We're still helping the community. They just won't see that part on the show.
Right. She says, like, not focus on the people that are displaced by your development or development in general, because this is like the whole premise of HGTV, right? Like, everything is about development. And can we spin this so that it's better just portraying the people that are being helped in the community, which is like at first feels a little deflating to Whitney because she sees that as an important part of what she does. But then they flip this around. Oh, we'll focus on the environmental aspect. That's really what got us into this to begin with. So this is okay. And it's not going to change what we do in our real life because not everything needs to be on the show. And just having the show will be a benefit to the community. So it's like already compromising these things and repackaging them is a win. And I wonder if the cameras aren't on them, maybe they don't care about Fernando and whether or not he has a job and all of these other things that were like so important to making them look good. Now that nobody's watching, does it really matter if they do them anymore?
Well, there's also this piece. I think it's really well balanced between the way that they try to pitch themselves to each other as people who do good. But there are these moments with slips where Asher says, oh, maybe we should actually wait to sell Juniper Lane because when the show comes on, it will be worth more, which he's right. He is right that probably you can, you know, put up the value of a home that you're trying to sell if it has like been in the area or even been on television. And so if they really cared about this community, that's not what they would do, but they're again, the whole purpose is to drive up the land value of all of these properties.
All right. Yeah. There's no losers, but some of the winners are bigger winners others.
That's right. All right. So the doorbell rings and it's Maria from two blocks over. And she shares a piece of paper that's been going around about a man named Vic, who is concerned about a package thief and implying that people are stealing his packages and that if they return them, no harm done. But they are upset about what this is doing to the community. And she literally says, you, the exact words you said is you would bring in people who would bring harmony to the neighborhood. And this is not doing that. Some neighborhood strife happening, Amanda.
Yeah. So like this is, I mean, and of course, this is the tension that is going to happen when you're bringing in people who are outside of the community. I mean, this kind of thing, this whole like porch pirates, like doorknob, doorbell, like cameras, surveillance thing, like I hate it. I hate like the neighborhood Facebooks where they're like posting like, I don't know. I mean, I know that people want to be able to know that they're safely and reliably getting packages, but there's just something like, you know, so unneighborly and so, you know, individualistic and like about like accusing people in your neighborhood of doing these things or regarding like the whole like security cameras. And, you know, I know people feel like they need to protect themselves, but it's this attitude that these people are coming in and they're seeing everybody else in the neighborhood as being a threat to them because they're, you know, less economically well off because they probably have racist attitudes towards them. And Vic, who we already saw a little bit in, I think, episode one, when he was like being invited by the priest to be a part of like their community outreach. And he was like very awkwardly just like, nah, I think I'll pass. Like, this is somebody who's wants to, you know, be inside making his stir fries and playing video games on his Alienware computer and is like not interested in like seeing his neighbors as people that he's building a community with. And of course, this is upsetting because like this Maria and these other neighbors are feeling like as more and more of these homes get built and more of these people move in to the neighborhood, at like, how are they going to, are they going to be calling the cops on people because they're out barbecuing or doing whatever? So I feel like this is a very common story and part of what happens in these rapidly gentrifying areas.
Yeah, I think that we'll see when we'll go over and talk to him. And obviously there's the piece about not calling the police that comes up. But I do think, to your point about that, of what this signals that Vic is sending around this piece of paper being like, somebody's stealing my packages, you need to return them. What it's saying about the entire neighborhood rather than potentially, you know, an individual who might be doing this, or the fact that it's happening. Because I know I have, we had for a while, like our packages would get stolen a lot. And like, yeah, it's annoying. I mean, Whitney is right that like typically you can just get like Amazon or whoever you're ordering from will just be like, yeah, okay, we'll refund you or reship it or whatever.
Right.
You know? So yeah. But it's also more like about,
did this get delivered to the wrong house or did anybody see anything? Like there's different ways that you can approach your neighbors rather than like, hey, I know it was one of you, and if you return this now, I won't cause a stink about it. It's obviously like really upsetting to Maria and the other neighbors.
Yeah. So the conversation is pretty awkward. She does, Whitney tries so hard because, so before she goes over, Asher is concerned because this is a guy who does augmented reality. And
like he has a connection to a guy. Yeah. Vic has a connection to a guy.
But the real line here is like, she says, there's lots of people do AR. He says, yeah, but he's really good at incorporating natural light. Just like, it's like the epitome to which they are, that Asher is potentially not willing to let, like, he does not want her to go and confront this neighborhood at the off chance that they cannot have someone who not only can just use AR, but only specifically because he knows how to use natural light in his AR.
Wow. Yeah. And he also says, like, the discount is significant. And it's like, they're just, and he's just talking about jacking up the prices and selling something because he's going to make, like, it's just like the nickel and diming here while they're trying to do this.
So the other piece is before she goes over, Whitney also decides not to take her car. She's going to take the old walk over, which then she's saying hi to all these neighbors. She's going to talk to this one gentleman. She knows his dog and knows like the woman who's the owner of the wife of this man. I do like this because the man is on his phone. And so like the way Whitney is trying so hard to impress like the people of this neighborhood, but also like not, I mean, the guy doesn't seem like upset that it's happening, but it is like he's clearly on the phone, but it's like, this is a moment for her to like go pet the dog and show that she knows this man and his wife. Like, it's
so
very
intrusive and overly familiar. And Whitney is so proud of herself for like walking in this neighborhood and being part of the community. And it's like, and you know, and it's interesting because I really did, especially in this episode, I started to think it's like, you know, how much of Whitney, like, here do we give these, like, I mean, we've been really hard on Whitney and I think the show is hard on Whitney. I also think there's a part of her that's like genuinely trying to do something good, even if maybe her, you know, self-obsession clouds what, you know, that should be. And even if the motivation is a little bit self-serving, but like, you have to think about how like the privilege of being like a white woman and being able to just like go up to a stranger and start playing with their dog and being like very familiar with this person who doesn't even know you. Like, you have to imagine like this guy would never walk up to Whitney if she was walking her dog and just be like, I don't know you, but I'm going to grab your dog's face. And like, you know, like this is Whitney not kind of being aware of herself and assuming that she belongs someplace and can take up space and can be in the center of a community without having necessarily earned that.
Yeah. I mean, what I think I like about the show a lot is that there, I mean, I think to a degree, Asher also does care to some degree about Abshir and Nala, and I don't know the other but only...
Oh yeah, I think we do get her name. I think it's Hani, or I'll notice that when we get it. Yeah,
I think only to the extent that he's also getting a ton out of everything else that is happening in this whole situation. I think it's the same for Whitney, that I don't think Whitney does all this stuff without the idea that she, like, they probably leave if there's no HGTV deal on the board, right? I mean, I guess they've bought land, and so they're kind of like stuck, and her parents are from here as well. But to the degree that she would be this, and you know, she is the one being like, oh, we could renovate the house. Like, I don't think you become like this by I don't think we're going to get a character reveal that she is like fully evil and everything she is doing is an, I genuinely do believe that this is someone who thinks she's being earnest, but does not realize the massive amounts of harm
that
can also cause. Like in this scene, it's pretty innocuous. I don't mean to say like this is the worst thing she could do. It's just a really good example of the way that she's kind of just like wandering through the world thinking she's doing good. And in some ways, maybe she does get Fernando a job, but like then you counteract that with all the like, yeah, they're driving up home prices, like he has to get a job because, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
And I think it goes back to when she's having that conversation with the governor of the Pueblo, and he says that you know, people romanticize us, and like Whitney very much romanticizes, you know, Española and this community. And I think the second that the community doesn't reflect that romanticized version that she has in her head, that is ultimately self-serving, it's going to make her uncomfortable. And I fear what she might do in those situations. And we see a little bit of that. We'll get to like Fernando bringing the gun. It's like, I wonder, like when things don't live up to this idealized version of what Whitney wants it to be, like, will she be so kind and friendly and generous?
Yeah. So before we get, the Whitney Vic conversation, we also get one small moment of Asher getting out the farm, the chicken farm. Yes. And he is going to see, he's basically going to do a little test to see if you could pull off the packaging, reapply it, and if it would act the same as if it had been applied. Assuming, of course, that Nala did in fact open the chicken, remove the chicken, reseal the packaging, and put it back in the box.
I love this small moment of him so like, good. Well, what like could I do?
It's so gentle. He's so gently he's pulling it as little as possible to see if like, I got to see if there's any, it does not, it completely does not reseal. So it's like his science experiment fails immediately with, it's so good. All right. So Whitney's going to go to Vic's house. First of all, there's a stove outside, which he doesn't notice. I love this man, Vic. I don't know what it says, but that he's wearing a Jerry and Elaine and George and
Chris. I noticed that. I noticed. So good.
So good. He actually doesn't even want to do any more augmented reality work. He actually just liked to settle in. They talk about the stove. He swapped it out for a gas stove, which she will then reveal. This actually breaks the ability for your home to be considered a passive home because you had to vent it. Doesn't matter. He doesn't care. He owns the house now. And then
he's like, shouldn't it just be the way that I want it? Because it's my house.
I think he actually says the way that I like it or love it, which is great. Yeah. And then they're going to talk about the packages, the fact that three of them have been missing. I love, she says, I think you're actually handling it really well by actually not alerting the police. The company Alienware will actually not give him a return, even though she suggests, well, you'll just get a refund from Amazon anyway. At the end, she says, I got to look up that Alienware stuff. Sounds so cool.
I guess you could really learn something from your neighbors. Like, oh, she's so passive aggressive in this conversation. Like, you know, she's obviously upset about multiple things. I'll say about the gas stove. I think so. I know gas is less energy efficient than induction. So that I think might affect the energy efficiency of the home generally. And then, of course, as Whitney points out, you have to vent a gas stove. It's not safe for like a gas stove to be unvented. And she mentions like the home is its own ecosystem. And the house, like, I don't know how, like, is he venting it? I don't know how he is, like, because those homes were not designed. Like, we like had to put in a range hood in our stone house, and like somebody had to come in and like and hammer through stone to create, like, those are mirrored walls. I don't think he's venting it. First of all, and then also,
so that house is going to explode.
The house is going to explode. It's not safe. Like, she does, they do the whole thing, that test, Grace, with like the gas or this. Yeah. And like they do that test to make sure it's airtight and nothing is getting out. If his home is filling up with gas fumes,
that's, I mean, you really want to talk about a curse. The fact that right. they would come in and literally kill somebody seems like it's on the board.
So that's crazy. And then he's also disregarding what we find out is a $7,000 induction range.
Yeah. Yeah. So I do like this conversation. So again, last episode, we get the, I think it's last episode, maybe the one before, where Abshir wants this, the stuff all in writing. He doesn't have to pay rent. Mm-hmm. And I love what she calls, like, we have to put in a clause that says that they can't do this. He's like, I actually don't think we can actually like do
you
that.
You can't be like, once you buy this home, you can never do anything that Whitney doesn't like.
But we can try to encourage behavior is what he says. So yeah.
And Whitney says people like Vic don't deserve to be part of what we're building. And again, like this is to the point that this isn't scalable. It isn't inclusive. It isn't accessible right. to everybody. And like this is immediately, you know, their very idealistic vision of how this is going to be a real environmental solution is starting to crumble.
Well, so they acknowledge him throwing out the $7,000 stove. It says, wow, what privilege is what they say. It's very good. And Whitney does point out this might be a problem. We got to find the right people. There's going to be a lot of eyes on Espanola mm-hmm. and us, she mm-hmm. says. So, yeah. All right. Dougie drops off. He goes to drop off these car keys and we see this woman who looks very flustered, but it turns out to be a young teenage boy who comes out. It's like, mm-hmm. what the F? You said you'd be here at 8:30. And this woman wants to know what's going on. The boy's car is missing, seemingly. And Dougie, it kind of will all come to him. He'll remember. Yeah, actually, I bought your son alcohol because he was asking everybody to buy him alcohol. But then I like supervised him to make sure he wouldn't do anything bad. And I was basically teaching him a life lesson. So you should be thanking me, both mom and young teenage.
Yes. Boy. So Calvin's version of events is he came to our school and started lecturing us outside about how his wife died drunk driving. And then he bought us beer to teach us a lesson.
I don't know that that's not true.
Yeah. I don't know that. So, I mean, I think that the truth is probably somewhere between Calvin's version and Dougie's version, who says, no, you were asking me to buy you beer. And I made sure that you gave me the car keys before I bought beer. And then he gets way on his high horse and he's like, you're lucky that I bought your son beer. He could be dead in a ditch. And then Calvin bites back at him. He's like, you bought a miter beer. Blah, blah, blah. And he's like, we can go crime for crime.
We can go crime for crime. It's very funny. He'll have to go to Arizona State University.
Albuquerque Community College. Oh, no offense to Arizona State. Yeah. Wow. But then he like demands that they both thank him.
Well, she says thank you. He says, yeah, but I want one from him. And then he has to thank him. It's so funny. It's very funny. It's so dark. It's very sad. The last time we saw Dougie, like pre-waking up in his car, he was crying in his hotel room. So this is very sad.
Yeah.
Okay. We get my favorite line of the episode, Amanda, which Asher brings Abshir food from his pantry. And Abshir says, that's so great. I normally get so much food from the grocery store.
This presumption that like that they don't like, he's like, I don't need your food. I get my own food.
I normally get so much food from the grocery store is such a great line. This is up there with the whole rice and buns thing from last week. I really love this idea that they think like I don't know. It's great. It's so good. They also got supplements for his neck pain.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then Asher, again, being incredibly intrusive, is like, oh, I have to do a mold test. And the interaction here is like, well, I have to do it by law or you could sue me. And if she's like, well, I won't sue you. And he's like, yeah, I know, but you could. So I have to come in and do the mold test. And again, I do think this is like where the show is like, this is not inherently the work to make sure that there's, but Asher doesn't necessarily need like, you should consider doing a mold test or like here's the mold, but he's like, right. Nope, I'm going to come in and I got
to
do the
mold. Or I'm the owner and I would like to do a mold test. Is there a time that's good for you where I wouldn't be intruding on your family? But he just like walks in, like he owns the place and he does own the place. And like, that is, you know, obviously a very intrusive thing for Abshire and his family. And then the presumption of like, you know, that they don't have food, that they need food, you know, these like, you know, more goodies. Do you like these beet chips? But it's also like, it's very kind of like moralizing from the seagulls. It's like, these are the supplements you should be taking. This is the food that you should be eating. Like,
there's just lots of pasta in the pantry. Mm-hmm. This is a really funny interaction. Mm-hmm. I actually need a lot more Nala Nathan Fielder, like the actress Chris Nala, because the look that they give each other at the end of this confrontation is so funny. And I can't actually wait for either of them to basically yell at the other one. I can't wait for it. So he says, he does lots of pasta because Abshire says, oh, Nala loves pasta. Mm-hmm. He says, oh, what's your favorite kind? She says, spaghetti. And he says, do you like penne? Because of the chicken penne, which got stolen. And then she doesn't know what that is. So he shows
what's penne? Yeah.
He shows a box of penne pasta and she goes, that's macaroni. And he stares her down. So good. It's so funny. It's so that's macaroni. he doesn't want to really argue with a child.
Yeah.
He doesn't. He just like puts the box in the pantry. It's very funny. Mm-hmm. All right. Asher's gonna cut a hole in the ceiling to get this brown liquid to come out. Mm-hmm. The older daughter is gonna be asking how
it works. And her name is Hani. It says in the credits. Yeah.
Okay. And you know, she seems interested in science. Do you like science? Yeah. Yeah, she's so annoyed by him. I love it. I love that she's always annoyed by this. So he shows the petri dish. The weirdest line he says all episode is, maybe when it's done, you could take it to school and say your Uncle Asher helped you make it.
Oh my God. It's so gross. It's so gross. It's like, it's similar. It is similar to Whitney, like getting up with the dog and like talking to a man on his cell phone and being like, I met your wife. Tell her I say hi. It's like, it's this intrusive, like taking up space and claiming this kind of level of intimacy with people that's not respecting their autonomy to like make their own, like, you are not this person's uncle.
You see, in fact, their landlord.
Oh my
God. So then Abshire, he starts talking about the tiny curses. He watched the video where Homer turned into a DVD box set of 60 Minutes. And then he does an impression of an old person because that's who watches 60 Minutes.
He's an old geezer. And I love how Hottie's just like, that's not funny.
That's not funny. This is not funny. You're not being funny. Abshire's going to come and get him. And he does not want him to talk about curses. Back home, you just don't talk about that stuff. Mm-hmm. And Asher says, back home, like, where are you from? And he says, oh, Minnesota. So like culturally,
he's like, you believe in curses? Believes in curses.
And he says, no, actually, it's just that if you put that stuff in your head, it can become real. We don't want that in Nala's head.
Right. And this is like, I think that this is an important line because this is like what is happening to Asher. It's like this idea of curses is becoming a curse. It's like he's obsessed with this. He's seeing this places. He's changing his behavior because he's concerned about this. And like, it's actually him who is going to enact the negative things that happened to him, is like my sort of theory at this phase. So I think that Abshire's line here about putting an idea in your head, it can become very real. I think that this is ultimately the way the curse, in as much as curses are a thing in this show, is going to manifest. And we hear Dougie talk a little bit about curses later. So we can revisit this there.
I asked last week, I said, like, well, now we know the answer to the curse. And how is the curse going to like play? It must be the seagulls. No, we're fully still in like, everybody believes there's curses. I bet somebody's absolutely still getting cursed. Like, Asher's going to bring it up when he shouldn't. And someone will get like, for sure. I think we're going to see another curse. All right. So this is where Whitney is with her assistant at the shop.
Louisa
taking photos of this broken mirror, which is the new concept, right? That's the not full house mirror, shattered mirrors. Be very careful though. Don't get yourself in the
take it from an angle. Don't get your reflection.
And then also, could you go talk to Fernando outside? Because like the other day I asked you to talk to him and he said he wasn't going to bring in a gun anymore, but he clearly still has this gun. And
so I love this. Like, cause Louise is like, oh yeah, I talked to Fernando. He's like actually really nice. We talked for a while. And then she's like, but he still has the gun. Did you tell him it makes us uncomfortable? She's like, yeah, I told him it makes you uncomfortable.
And so this is really interesting too. So I think there's one read of this. We could like, I feel like we never hear what happens outside.
Yeah.
And Louisa seemingly goes outside and talks to him, comes back in and says like, yep, I told him and he said he won't bring the gun anymore. And I don't imagine that that is what's going to happen. Yeah. So, I mean, something here with a gun is still on the table seemingly, but we don't get to actually hear that conversation. So what's get said? And I feel like this is the opportunity where like, you know, Whitney's going to accuse Louisa of not saying it and Fernando will, you know, whatever this is, but clearly we're not supposed to near see what happens in the conversation. And it looks extremely jovial. Like Louisa and Fernando are like joking it up, but they're supposed to be talking about whether or not he's bringing a gun in. And so I feel like you're supposed to question, I don't know if you're supposed to question whether or not Louisa actually says it or not, but you're supposed to believe that Whitney is not really sure whether Louisa has said
it. And there's, and I think that, I mean, okay, of course we have a gun and we know what happens when you introduce a gun in the first act. So I think that's
Chekhov about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Ask Chekhov what happens. And then, so I think that there's, you know, this notion that there's a gun and he's going to bring it back. Right. I also think we hear like Louisa actually does form a relationship with Fernando. Like they're getting along better than Whitney and Louisa get along, and they're getting along better than Whitney and Fernando get along. So like there's something in Louisa's manner where she doesn't regard Fernando with the same kind of distance and condescension that Whitney does. And they actually connect. And for whatever reason, like, I don't know if Louisa brought up the gun or if they said, oh, you know, Whitney's upset about the gun, whatever. Like, it's clear that it doesn't mean the same thing to her. She's not as concerned about it. And maybe Louisa is lying here, or maybe they're laughing about Whitney. Like, one thing that I noticed that in subtitles, like, the conversation ends and Fernando's like, I think it's, I don't know if this was Fernando, but they're both smiling and one of them says, okay, let me know. So I don't know if they're making plans, but you're right. It's like very jovial and it's very clear that like the urgency and discomfort that Whitney feels about the gun was not what was communicated, whether Louisa passed on the message in some way or not.
Right. All right. So Asher watches Vic get in his car. He's with this man and they are going to get the stove. But Asher realizes he cannot be in the security footage. We need this man to do it by himself.
And yeah, this is their contractor, Freckle, the one that did the kind of the smoke test at the house. Yeah.
This is great. I'm not picking up on it. You're like, that's the same person from before. And I'm like, oh, fooled me. he brings a very skinny ramp, I have to say about Freckle. But nevertheless, they probably maybe should just leave the stove alone. Asher refuses, or Asher should get out and help. She does not do. And he tells him, you got it. You're really strong.
You got it. You're jacked, man. Yeah. Like, so Asher doesn't want to be seen on the security camera taking the $7,000 stove. And like Freckle says, but it's garbage. Like, why would he get mad at you for getting garbage? He's like, it's unprofessional. And he ducks. Like, of course, this man can't carry this stove by himself. Like, and he tries to push it over the ramp. It falls over. It's completely destroyed. So they just like wasted it. And then Freckle wants to push it back to the curb so it's not in the middle of the road. Nope. And Asher's like, just get in. Like, let's leave.
This would be the biggest sign that Asher did it, right? Or like something, you know, that he tried, you know, that he'll get caught for it in some way because it's like not in the place it was before. So if, just a foolish plan. All right, Asher and Dougie are talking about just the TV show and who they're going to use. Whitney doesn't want to use Vic. He was racist anyway. And Dougie says, that's the type of stuff I want in the show. And Asher says, the racism? He says, no, the conflict. Mm-hmm. He wanted to bring him Vic to a fiesta, which would have been good because he's single. Mm-hmm. And they talk about the fact that, like, look at us. He fully gives the Paul Rudd meme.
Yes, look at us.
TV show.
Look at us.
He apologizes for bullying him all these years. And it's like, you didn't bully me. And he's like, remember that time we like left you alone and like we pantsed you and we did all this stuff that's like very clearly bullying? And I was like, no, we were just having fun, which is so sad.
It's so sad. And then I also noticed that, okay, they ditched him somewhere and then the pantsing at the swim meet. Grace, is this a small penis thing that Asher got?
Very much could have been. Yeah, for sure. The pants thing. Yeah. But they were just joking around those times.
It was Asher's fun. Everyone sad, had fun. Yeah.
Sad sort of like, you know, this is sad. I don't like it. Well, it's fine. Asher.
It is. Yeah. I mean, it's like nice that Dougie is apologizing because now here Dougie is very sad and wants a friend. Right. And like Asher either has denied it or suppressed it or kind of repackaged this as like, oh, we were friends and this was fun. Yeah. And Dougie's like, yeah, it was fun.
It's so interesting, I think, in this dynamic, because we know that, you know, Dougie has wanted to hang out with Asher, like socially, and with Whitney too. And they don't want to. They do seem like Asher, to a degree, has had this like, you know, glow up. He's married to this like, you know, this gorgeous woman, and he's going to be on TV. And even though Dougie is like this producer, I think they do find him like weird and off-putting. And so I feel like for Asher, he can't have been bullied by the guy that he now basically, you know, doesn't want to hang out with. Like, it's not, that's a bad look for him, you know? So I think that that's really interesting that like, and Dougie is like actively trying to apologize for it. Yeah. She's like, nah, don't worry about it. It's fine. Yeah. They talk a little bit about wanting to use the stuff that happened when they were filming, that they left on the table in the pilot, the reporter and the girl. And, they talk about how Whitney wouldn't have wanted it. And Asher says, you have to get used to that because Whitney isn't going to change.
Whitney isn't going to change. And this seems to be what Asher has internalized, that if there's an issue that he's unhappy with, he has to get used to it because Whitney is immovable. And, you know, and Dougie is sort of planting the seed that like, if Whitney's going to have a moral issue with everything as we produce the show, because like now we have the pilot picked up, we have to make all these other episodes. We can't just be throwing away good stuff because Whitney has a problem with it. But Asher is fully on Whitney's side.
Yeah. What do you make of the Stars and Stripes cola?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know what that note was supposed to mean. Like, so you pointed out, Grace, and I have to say, like, very astute of you, that there were lots of shopping bags in Dougie's hotel, and they're in Dougie's hotel. We're going to see his $1,700 jacket. Did he get this at Dan's Laugh Lashes?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe. It's got a lot of patterns. It must be. He didn't have to say how much it was. I knew it was expensive because it had many
complicated patterns. He's like, he really like, he seems to be like, we see a Domino's. He finally got his Domino's boxes in there.
And yet he's buying dollar soda, Stars and Stripes.
He also knows the different price. Like at some stores, it's $1.25. Some places it's $1.50. So I think we get the sense that Dougie's just really been out there in this community making purchases. I don't know if there's something about like, you know, cause that like, he sounds thrifty about the soda, but then he spends $1,700 on the jacket.
Asher's absolutely going to provide Nala with some delicious Stars and Stripes.
Yeah,
Let them know. He's gonna let Sheer know about the cheap soda.
Oh yeah, like right? I got the Stars and Stripes like for $1.
You could get it for $1.50. Like you could buy, like that's the place to get your soda. And they'll be like, we just like drinking actual Coca-Cola.
I did notice that the groceries that he bought, he mentions the beet chips, but he bought like some pretty high-end pasta and he bought the Rao's tomato sauce. No,
he didn't buy anything. He gave food from his pantry. This isn't food that like we see when he's on the phone with Whitney. He's like,
yes, he's packing up his own pantry.
Yeah. This is not food he bought for them. And nor did he go out. Like he didn't take them shopping. He just, what he happened to have, which I, you know, presume that they buy high-end food. Yeah. The jacket is wild. So anyway, Asher thinks that he was cursed and he explains the story. And then Dougie reveals that he too was cursed when his wife died in a car accident while he was drunk. That's a curse.
He says, I was cursed. I'm serious. There's nobody in particular that I can point to, but there's no other way I can explain what happened with Melanie. I happened to be drunk that night. Nothing makes sense. And then I don't want to talk about this anymore. So this like, complete, like it actually makes perfect sense. Unfortunately, it like tragically makes sense that you were driving drunk and you got into a car accident. But it's this idea of the complete deflection of any responsibility, and you know, this getting an idea in your head that these things happen to you. It, like even the way that he explained it to his date, we took note of this. It's very sad.
And again, there's this piece that's similar about Whitney and Asher, in which there are pieces of them in which they're actually like, it's the complicated nature that like Whitney does, I think, have some piece of her that genuinely wants to help people. In this instance, we do know, presumably from what we've been told, is that they were hit by a car. So yes, he was drinking, but then they got hit by a car. And so, cause like she asked like, well, don't you think if you were not drinking, like you would have been, and he's like, how would I possibly have known that that's, which is like, true, probably wasn't drinking. He might have been able to avoid an accident, but he also was hit by a car. So it's like, there is this, like, I am not trying to absolve Dougie of driving drunk. Just a case that's coming, please. But at the same time, it is like he is, it's more complicated than that.
Which it is more compelling. Complicated. Yeah. No, it's actually fascinating. And it's like a very important detail that like if you do something wrong but something bad still happens to you, where do you draw the line between your personal responsibility and just, you know, bad luck or a curse or something else? And I think that that is like a very difficult thing to grapple with, and like this example with Dougie is incredibly tragic. And I wonder if there's going to be more tragedy in this story that we're going to see unfold. I would bet that there is. I also think that this is interesting sort of in relationship to the homes that Whitney builds. And I thought that this, like, it struck me when she walks up to Victor's house, like how they both kind of like these mirror homes, they kind of blend in and they also stick out at the same time.
Right.
And like they, it's literally a reflection and also like a deflection. It's like she sees herself in the home. It's also reflecting the community back. And I feel like it, and that, and the way that mirage of the curse shows up at the beginning of the episode, it's this kind of idea of like, what am I responsible for and what is happening around me? And I think that that's a really interesting moral line that the show is playing with.
Yeah. Dougie also shows the footage of when Nala cursed Asher, and they're static immediately afterwards, which Asher does try to like that. I was far away. That just happens. Dougie's not so sure. The static could be caused because of a curse moving through the air, I guess.
Yeah. What do you think of this? Are you convinced?
But I like it. I like that Dougie is like, oh my God, I like, let me show you. There's like there's actual evidence. And then it's like a little bit of static, which can completely, as Asher does immediately, like, oh, you can write that off. It's like it's not being a curse, but it's just enough to like fuel maybe even because Asher stays behind and he watches the footage again, right? He's like listening in.
No, he watches it over and over and over again.
Yeah, which we saw Whitney doing the previous night with the footage of the sweater and the fight. So, yeah. All right, Whitney's getting a massage and she asks, is it possible to prepay for somebody else? The man says, you know, do they have insurance? And she says, let's assume they don't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just more. And she walks home and she hears this humming and sort of singing. And a woman asks if she wants to join. And she sees these people sort of meditating and, singing this and humming.
This is a Sikh ashram, I think. And I looked up to see like if there's any significance, because it looked like there were a lot of like white converts in this community. And I think that there is with a little bit, and don't like, you know, don't quote me on this, with a little bit of internet digging, it looks like in Española, there's a Sikh ashram, which is considered the capital headquarters of Sikhs in the US, according to their website. And that there's a history of Sikh converts in the area. So Whitney is like drawn to this and that she's invited to participate and says that she'll just watch, which I think was an interesting note for her, like that kind of demonstrates that even though she has this romanticization of the community, she kind of also holds it at a distance and doesn't feel completely comfortable participating in it. And then there's also a sign on the wall that says always take the high road.
Yeah, neon sign. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what to make of this yet. I think your observation is correct that she, you know, we've seen this where she like very much others. I mean, that's like the basis of that scene last week where
right.
the hot dogs, where she's like, yeah, but you must have them with rice. She's very othering. We've seen it in the, with the art exhibit and obviously with the general of the tribe. So yeah, potentially more of that. And yet she does not actively join in. But we don't get much more. I wonder whether we'll get more, or this is a character moment that we'll stick with us. Dougie's swimming laps, and then he gets in his car and he looks at his ceramic shard.
Yeah. One thing I noticed, he's swimming laps, and then like a kid gets in the pool and he looks like super annoyed and kind of like leaves it off.
Well, isn't that, I mean, the show is about like coming to Española and like claiming, right? Like claiming. Mm-hmm. And so like then when they do something you don't like Vic,
you're
like, oh, that's so annoying. You don't get to be part of this. This is like when the kid gets in the pool. It's like, oh my God, that's so annoying. And Dougie leaves the pool. It's similar. Yeah. But the ceramic shard, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I mean, it's under the one of the actual big trees.
Yeah.
When he finds, when he has to move the scorpion rock. I don't know. What do you make of this?
I mean, it seems like, you know, this is like an artifact, a found artifact. We know that like there's some like the Dougie now, we know, places significance on this idea of things being cursed or having some spiritual significance. Like, I wonder if he thinks that this means something or could be some kind of like, I don't know. I felt like this was like the immunity idol hunt craze, and he found something like that he was going to use. This is like the medallion of power. I have no idea, but he's holding on to it with some significance. He also, like, you know, like this is the day that they found out that the show gets picked up. It's interesting. Can we like just pause a second to talk about Dougie, like, and the show getting picked up?
Yeah.
What do you think, like, is Doug, like, obviously the Seagulls are really happy about this. Is Dougie happy that the show gets picked up?
Yeah, so, I mean, I felt like when I pointed out the shopping bags earlier, that was because I felt like that was significant where Dougie's at the casino gambling and he's talking about that he's going to hit the road or whatever. But he doesn't actually hit the road. He doesn't leave. And so I guess you could say like he was waiting to see whether or not the show would be picked up and then he would leave, and that there are legitimately other things. But you know, and it's interesting because I'm all over the place here in my thoughts, but the piece about him being hit by a car too, we only know that from him, right? That's what he tells his date. So we actually know that that's true. It absolutely could be like way more his fault than he's implying. So I don't know that we don't really have a ton of proof at the moment to show that he is like good faith in a lot of the things he says. As we don't really have the opposite to be true either, but he does give off this notion that he does not tell the truth a lot. And so
he does sort of lie about how the show almost didn't get picked up. Like, he doesn't know anything about that, right? Like, to what we've seen, like when he's talking to Asher about how they need more conflict. Like, Martha didn't say that to him. Like, he didn't hear that.
Right. So I guess for me, I kind of, my read is that he actually doesn't really have anywhere to go. And him wanting to hang out with Asher and hang out with Whitney is like him just looking for something to like hold on to. Mm-hmm. And the shopping too is like just trying to like fill his day with stuff.
Right.
And that he might have been successful at one point. But it also could be that he has many things that he could go to creatively, but they have not found themselves to be fulfilling in the way that having, you know, it was his wife, right? Is it his wife or at least his girlfriend?
It was his wife who died.
Yeah. So not that that's like not easy to like figure out, like, who, you know, so I don't know, my thought process here with the shard is like, he finds this thing that is he was meant to find it. He has it and it's his thing, and he looks to it as he's like sitting in his car. I also do wonder, as like he just thinks he's been like, we're clearly playing in spirituality to a degree, and the fact that Asher has really not believed in it and all these other people, pretty much everybody else, does seemingly believe in it is kind of fun. And so the idea that like the shard might show up in something with Asher where he's like, why do you have, no, it's like literally just a piece. It's literally just, but it has more meaning. And the idea that things can be what you
if you put an idea in your head, it has this power.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that Dougie, like going back to like what his orientation is towards the show getting picked up, like I feel like in the ideal, like in his dream, this show gets picked up and he and Asher like bond over it. And like he gets to, and they like love him and appreciate him. And they're all really good friends doing this together.
Right.
And given that Asher and Whitney kind of hate him, and Asher's like making it clear that he's always going to side with Whitney over Dougie, I think that that's kind of sad for him. Like, I feel like he's, you know, it's better that the show got picked up than not, because he doesn't have anything else going on. But I also think that there's this like kind of, he's now trapped in this thing where he is still miserable, and that his only way of like dealing with this is going to be to wedge them apart. But I was just wondering, the reason I was tying this to like, how does he feel about the show? Like, I was wondering if there's some significance to like, I found this thing when we got the good news, like, you know, like this is, or this is a sign of like how things are going to change or how I'm going to get things back.
The question of like whether or not he's happy, it seems like he's like fine, but like it's not as great as he wishes as it could be, I think. All right, then we get Asher in the comedy class. Everyone goes around trying to make people laugh with no words. And Asher does. He does like a little like face and he makes some noises, which nobody else did. And also nobody laughs.
Nobody
and
laughs.
Then they move on. And a man, this very good bit is to pull a rope from the ceiling. I mean, that was A+. Yeah.
I mean, we've noted this. It's like the, you know, like, I'm a baby. Like, it's like he does the most off-putting things. Like,
comedy is about being surprised, Amanda, so his instincts are not totally wrong.
But it seems like his instincts are totally wrong. Like, nobody likes him. Like, we have Hani early in the episode saying that you're not funny.
Yeah.
When he does the spank you very much thing, it's like Whitney is like being a good sport over it, but it's like he can't read a room. He's so off-putting, and like, you know, and it's kind of brilliant the way this episode ends, because it fades to black, but we continue to hear like people reacting to all of the other, you know, all of the other students doing their wordless comedy, and everybody else gets a laugh except for Asher. Like, literally everyone in the room gets a laugh except for Asher.
What I love is it, like, just like, I know that the scene doesn't need like a ton more breaking down than this, other than that, like, he doesn't understand, like, he can't read the room, but everyone, and we've all been in this where it's like, we're going to play an icebreaker, and you're like, oh my God, this is so bad. You know, it's like, I really don't want to do this, whatever. And you do it. And the reason why I think everybody else gets a laugh is because they do it in a pretty earnest way. Mm-hmm. And I think Asher is looking legit. He is hoping that what he does, people can't continue the work. It's so funny. It can't help but like, that is the funniest thing. They're going to be crying laughing, and he just goes for it in a way that makes no sense, and he can't do it. When all he needed to do was give the least amount of effort, because everybody is like rewarding, like, oh, you stuck out your tongue, you're like, oh, you pulled a rope, you know, like, that's all they're not doing the world's funniest things, and that's kind of the point.
We have Charlie Chaplin in this class. It's like, literally, it's the most friendly audience ever. It's like giving everything a laugh. And like,
but he needs to be like above that. He needs to like prove that basically Whitney was wrong to make him come to the class, you know?
Yeah. He says, if I'm already so funny, it'll just be a waste of money. And I love how, you know, he's like, well, are you going to take the class too? And of course, Whitney is not in this class. This is just Asher's class.
The best line from Whitney early in the episode is like, you're so confident. Which is true. He's very confident in the way he's not funny, but he is so confident when he does the old man voice for so long. She's like, this is not good. Yeah. So I really liked the end of the episode. I thought it was very good. I've liked the show so far. I think this is maybe not the strongest episode.
Yeah.
I still think it's like very good. Mm-hmm. I wonder if this is one where we'll come back to. I have a lot of stuff where I'm like, I'm not sure. I feel like as a podcaster, I'm like trying to like, I'm digging underneath the big tree for the ceramic shard, but the ceramic shard Whitney at the Sikh ashram. Like, these are things where I'm like, I don't know that I know the full meaning yet, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. In a show that's, we're on episode 4 out of 10.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Like that, like I said, there were like transcendent moments in the last 2 episodes, the scene where Dougie's talking about his DUI in episode 2, the scene in episode 3, where Whitney and Asher are reenacting the sweater stuff for Instagram. Like, those were scenes where I was like, wow, like that's amazing. And I don't think that there's anything, like, I feel like this is still consistently good and has, you know, keeping up with my high opinion of the show, but maybe one of the weaker episodes. I do think I had like this sense of horror in the beginning with Dougie and the 3 cars.
Wyatt never got his car back. Should we just flag that as something that hasn't happened yet either? Seemingly Dougie has not gone to visit Wyatt yet.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that was another visit that we didn't see. We got the whole thing. Yeah. But like, I don't know if Calvin and Wyatt show up again. But like, yeah, so I'm still enjoying the show very much. I'm very curious to see where this goes. Now we're going to get presumably more of the HGTV show getting produced. Barrier Coffee is going to open up again. That's
right. Fernando doesn't need to even do security.
There's this other family, this couple that is the other homeowners that I don't think we've met yet. I think it's like Dennis and Lucinda, who were get mentioned.
As the people that Dougie is going to focus on instead.
Right. So right. I think that we'll probably get that couple, more of that. So I'm very curious to see, like, if we get more of the kind of visual contrast to like of, HGTV style filming versus like the cinematography that we've seen in The Curse so far, which is like, you know, like we've noticed and it continued in this episode, like really interesting viewing people through windows or at an odd distance and interesting angles. Another great episode, Grace.
Great episode. Under the big tree. In the meantime, before we're back next week, Amanda, what else you got going on?
Well, I am covering 6 Feet Under twice a week with Ariel. We are zipping through season 1. We are past the halfway mark now and having a lot of fun with that. So definitely check out that coverage. I post your recaps. And Melissa Woodward and I just wrapped up our coverage of Lessons in Chemistry. So if you're still catching up on that, you can find that. And as always, I tweet out all of the podcasts that I am on my Twitter, which is at Dr. Amanda R. And how about you, Grace?
Yeah, I'm talking Fargo with Mike Bloom and LT, The Crown with Shannon Gus, movies each week with Ariel. This week, we chat about 2 movies. We would talk about The Holdovers as well as Napoleon, the Ridley Scott movie. Yellowstone season 2 is wrapping up. We're talking about that. And then Full Spoiler Recaps with Jess Sterling. Each week we talk about a full movie. This week we'll be talking about Colin from Accounts, which is an Australian show, which originally aired in Australia and is now airing in the US. They're kind of like repurposing it to air in America. So that's kind of fun. Yeah, we'll chat about that. I'm on social media at Hi From Grace. We'll be back next week to chat about episode 5. Until then, thank you very much for listening.